Welcome, light beings, to another episode of the Ethereal Phoenix Podcast. I am your host, Veronica, and today we are joined by Jennifer Allen, a yoga teacher and Ayurveda wellness coach. Welcome, Jennifer.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Veronica, for having me. It was really, when you asked me to be on this podcast, I was like, wow. You know, we've known each other for a little while in our Dharma coaching training, and we met that way, and we were able to share, you know, quite a bit of intimacy with one another as far as coaching and getting to know one another. And I was like, oh, I'd be honored to be on the podcast. So thanks for having me.
Oh yeah. Thank you for making time for me. Yes. I didn't want our conversations to end, honestly. That's what happened. But I wanted to know more about yoga, because when people talk about yoga, all you think of is exercise, but there's more, right?
There is so much more. So let's talk about, we can start by talking about yoga, and I'll just share with you that my, and anyone else who's listening, my path into and through yoga has been wildly, diverse. I first discovered, yoga out of sheer curiosity, which isn't that always such a joyful way to enter into something, just out of sheer curiosity. In 1993, I was in graduate school, at what was then called Sagamon State University in Illinois. And it was a really, kind of cutting edge university. A lot of people were studying political science and environmental science and how they overlapped. Many people were working at internships in the federal government and trying to bring in, you know, environmental policy, environmental sustainability in the 90s. Okay. So I was connecting with a really great group of people. And one of the people happened to say, hey, do you want to go to a yoga class? And I was like, I grew up in the Midwest. And like, I didn't even know what they were talking about. You know, I was like, at least now people know, they have an idea in their mind of what yoga meant. Mm-hmm. To me, it was like, I didn't even know what they were speaking about. Mm-hmm. So my first yoga experience, I think in reflecting back, was Shivananda yoga. I can't say for certain, but basically it was an evening class. They had no lights on. Everything was candlelit. And you did one pose, and then you lay down in Shavasana to rest. And then you did another pose. And then you lay down in Shavasana, the final relaxation pose at the end. And that's what the class was. And I found it really, really interesting. They were playing chanting music on cassette tape. They had cassette tapes you could check out. So like, it was just really a sweet experience. And almost... what I've come full circle to in my yoga at this point, that yoga is really, can be really a sweet, sweet surrendering practice, to love, really.
Okay. I know that I've tried yoga, and what I mean by tried is like, I'm really not trained in it, and I just do the YouTube videos.
Yeah.
What is your advice as far as if someone wants to start with yoga?
Sure. Yeah. To me, yoga is really about, it's about getting to know yourself better, for one. It's about really learning about your home, you know, your body, your breath, your experiences. So I would say, just being willing, open and willing to connect with and commune with yourself is the advice that I would give to people. Meaning, if yoga for you is literally just sitting down and breathing and just being present to that, that's yoga to me. Okay. If yoga is turning on YouTube and practicing with Adrian or whoever we find out there online, right? She's very accessible. Yes. We turn it, she's got a dog. It's really cute. You know, it's great. If yoga is turning on a video and being guided by somebody else to move through a series of poses while staying present to the connection with yourself.
Okay. Yeah. So the primary goal is to go within and be present with yourself. It's not to lose.
That's what I'd say.
Lemons, right?
Yeah. That's my interpretation of yoga. I mean, yoga is a greater philosophy. You know, there are different aspects of yoga, breath, you know, pranayama, self-study, there are the poses. And that's kind of what the Western world has kind of taken out is, the poses, the asanas, the down dog, the cow face pose, So yeah, the goal of yoga would not be to necessarily do a pose or perfect a pose. Yeah, or lose weight or fit into any clothes. I mean, those are all beautiful and sometimes unexpected side effects of a practice of yoga. But really, I think it would be the ability to surrender to relationship, to loving relationship with oneself.
Okay, great, great. So then what is the origins from India? What would be the origins of, because we only really have, you know, what we're exposed to Western over here is just the poses. It's just the exercise. So
yes,
as far as the West, I'm sorry, Eastern philosophy and what really dives into it, is it religious? Because I know some people are like, oh, that's not my religion. I can't believe in that. It's like, well, what do you mean believe in it? It's working out, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. I wanted to go in and teach yoga to my kids' classroom. This is way on back, you know, when they were young. And I actually came up with a lot of resistance in the school system because of that, because people, other parents were concerned that their kids would be receiving religious studies. Now, I am no yoga philosophy expert, but I do want to give credit to my teachers, Noam Azay, and Naeem Jesni. They were my first yoga teachers, and any other teacher I've had. So I'm taking information that they have received and studied through their teachers, and you know, it's come down through me. So I would say yoga is not necessarily religion, but there is worship of deities in yoga, if that's the style of yoga, if that's the depth of practice that you want to take it to, right? Like, it certainly could be a very religious and spiritual experience, and it does not have to be. It can go back to that relationship with oneself, right? I've more recently started studying bhakti yoga. So bhakti yoga is, how would I describe that? The yoga of love, or the yoga of devotion. And, you know, I think what people, when they think of bhakti yoga, they might think of what my teachers might call bhakti 1.0, which is the Hare Krishna movement.
Okay.
I think people have a visualization of that in their minds. Bhakti 2.0 is a little bit different. You know, it's much more all encompassing, but really the bottom line is, like, everyone's dharma or purpose is to serve with love.
Okay.
That is the whole teaching.
Okay.
So whether you believe in that or not, I don't know. Yeah. So, you know, you and I both study Dharma. And it's like, and I've seen that time and time again, like, if we get down to the essence of people's core, it's serving with love. We may all do that in wildly different, diverse, and beautiful ways, but serving with love, I think, is, that's what bhakti yoga says is the goal, the true purpose of each individual. There are a few things I'd love to say, and it's about developing a practice. Because to me, yoga is not, I mean, there's so many different ways we can look at yoga. Yoga could be a practice of getting to know yourself. Yoga, I shouldn't say could be, yoga is a practice of getting to know yourself. Yoga is a practice of rolling out your mat and moving your body and connecting to your breath, right? And yoga is the practice of how we live each and every aspect of our lives off our mat.
Okay.
So I'd just like to encourage people, it doesn't have to be a certain thing, like whatever you might see in the media or on videos or whatever you think yoga might look like. I think it's sort of, in a way, people's spiritual practices in other realms. You know, if you have another type of spiritual practice or devotional practice, might be another way to say it. It can look wildly different. Some people go to church and sit in the pew or in the seats every Sunday, and that's their practice. Mm-hmm. Some people's practice of their devotion or spirituality is service. You know, they might go to the soup kitchen and serve every single day, day after day after day. Some people might, you know, use prayer beads and do a, I'm not Catholic, but, you know, they might do a rosary.
Rosary.
So just like your spiritual or devotional life looks different for everybody. So too, you know, because your yogic life look different. So I would say, you know, first of all, it doesn't have to be one thing. It can be anything. And that's where this idea of Ayurveda comes. It weaves really nicely into this conversation. Is Ayurveda is not a one size fits all healing modality. And yes, and Ayurveda, I should say, is it's going to be different. The way you practice Ayurveda to bring balance and healing is going to be different than the way I might practice Ayurveda to bring balance and healing.
Okay.
And I would say so too is the same for yoga. So I would say let your practice, be what is true and authentic for you, not what you think it should be or what you see it represented as.
Okay.
Now, yeah, that'd be my first advice.
Okay. Now I'm wondering with yoga, I like to meditate. I like to meditate a lot. Mm-hmm. And what I've noticed is because I don't really know. So I usually do the videos, right? But when I try to do it on my own and I try to like just move, just try to move, like I'm not really following any poses, but I try to just mm-hmm. move. It gets me into like a meditated state. And then, with the whole, prana breathing.
Yes.
Helps me focus. And so, yes, it does bring you right back into yourself. As far as breath work, it seems like yoga is pretty much all encompassing, right? If you separate everything out, because there's breath work, there's, mm-hmm. workout, there's not diet, but, nutrition, mm-hmm. devotion, like you just mentioned, you could work with deities or you could not,
right.
service. So it seems like it's so much more. It's the tip of the iceberg, right? There's so much more under the surface,
yes.
and you can do
yes.
so many different things. And from it, you could just separate it if you're like, well, I don't really want to move that much, so I'll just do the breath work from it.
Mm-hmm.
So you could just separate it.
I
right?
had a yoga teacher. Yeah, you can. You can. You could think of it as a smorgasbord and pick and choose what works for you. There may be other teachers or other lineages that might say, no, you need to do this. Okay. So I'm acknowledging that everyone has a different take on it, but I think, do what serves you. I had a yoga teacher early on in my experience with yoga, and I was very much of the, I wanted to get my workout in per se, by the way I live my life. So I wanted to go hiking. I wanted to ride my bike everywhere. Like I really wanted versus going to the gym or something. Right. That was at the phase I was in. And I said to her, I said, well, how do you keep up your cardio? How do you stay fit? She's like, pranayama, which is the breath work.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, oh, and there's actually a lot of research
mm-hmm.
Out about the power of the breath and the ability for the breath to support and even increase lung capacity, both
mm-hmm.
the inhalation and the exhalation. There's a lot of breath work that was used during COVID recovery. So the science has sort of caught up, the modern science has sort of caught up to this ancient wisdom of pranayama, breath work. So yeah, breath work could be your, cardio.
Actually, I've seen videos of people doing their breath work and their stomach, like they have, it's usually a man and he's shirtless, right? And you could see like the stomach, the muscles and everything working around. I'm like, how do you do that? And
I don't know. I still don't know how to do that.
It's almost
churning.
Like a belly dancing,
churning,
almost like, yeah.
I think is what you're talking about. Yeah. There are some ancient practices of yoga that I do not practice, in the Ashtanga tradition, that would in our modern society seem very, very, very weird. But things are coming back. Like there's ice cold plunging now, which, maybe 50 years ago, people might have been like, you're crazy if you're doing that or whatever.
You're going to catch your death of cold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So, and now, it's what ancient yogis have been doing for a long, long time is exposure to cold,
mm-hmm.
in addition to many other things. But yeah, there are some really unique and strange things that we might consider strange or unique done in the yoga traditions. Uh-huh. Yeah. We're just not used to them. We're just not familiar with them.
Right. Now I have a question. I don't know if you're going to know the answer to it, but it just reminded me, I mentioned belly dancing. Are you familiar with belly dancing?
I know what it is, but I have no personal lived experience
okay.
of it. And I have no connection to it whatsoever. No.
Okay.
Other
I'm going to have
than
to look for
watching
somebody.
It's beautiful. Yeah.
I'm going to have to look for somebody because I did very small research on it. And, It's a dance to help you connect with your divine feminine, your Shakti. energy, right? And it's for the woman. It's not a seduction dance. It's actually for the woman to deal with her menstruation cramps and the womb health. It's mostly for that. But you see a beautiful woman shaking around, you're like, yes. Oh, that's seduction. How dare
it's
you?
It's beautiful. And it is beautiful. Like yeah, I watch it and I think, what is a beautiful, amazing way to move this human body, right? Yeah.
To move that energy, move it out. Mm-hmm. And can we talk about that? Moving out the energy.
Yes. Certainly. Yes. When I think of energy, I mean, I think of it in a lot of different ways. One thing that instantly comes to mind is, again, in Ayurveda, there's this principle that like increases like, and opposites bring balance or healing. Okay, then that's a basic principle of Ayurveda, and which can be applied to anything and everything. So if we think of energies, if we think of this idea of masculine energy and feminine energy, which you were mentioning, that the feminine energy, the Shakti, some of us might need to cultivate more of that feminine energy, right? We might be living in a masculine environment, right? Maybe in a corporate job or where there's a lot of intense masculine energy. Our society is very much masculine energy driven right now. You know, do, go, get it done, toxic productivity. You know, your worth is completely dependent upon what you do and produce. Mm-hmm. And some of us might need to bring in and cultivate some of this feminine energy. Mm-hmm. And conversely, there might be some of us that are very feminine, that really are seated and rooted in our feminine energy. And maybe we need to bring in a little bit more masculine energy to take action on something, right? Mm-hmm. To get something done, to move forward in our careers or our path or our purpose. Mm-hmm. That's what immediately comes to mind when I think of moving energy. Mm-hmm. Thoughts on that? Or I also have another take when you said move energy.
Go ahead.
So that would be the first thing. And then I thought of nervous system work. Like I've been doing a lot of study, both self-study and practices, and then studying with teachers about yoga, Ayurveda, and the nervous system. And when our body experiences a threat, whether that's an actual threat happening in the moment or a perceived threat, like something is happening in the moment, but it's actually not threatening, but we've coupled it or connected it to a past threat. So anyway, if our body perceives a threat or experiences a threat, we experience a charge, right? Mm-hmm. And that is a natural thing. You know, that is how our bodies are meant to work. But that charge must be released. Mm-hmm. It must be moved through. As you mentioned, we could think of the charge as energy, if we want to. And if that charge happens and it's stored, then we're basically storing that charge or storing that trauma and creating what in Ayurveda might be called ama or disease. So we do need to move. We do need to move that energy or charge out. Yeah.
Okay. So moving into Ayurveda, all I really know about Ayurveda is that it is based, it's nutrition based on, or what would be the best nutrition for your energy centers, right? Is that right or am I wrong?
It could be. Please educate me. It could be. Yeah, I will. I'd love to. And I'm going to give you really I've been studying Ayurveda for about 8 or 9 years, and I'm really only scratching the surface. Wow. So want to give credit to all my teachers who have got me this far, but you know, I did not grow up in a lineage of Ayurveda. You know, I have not lived in India. I haven't even been to India. Oh. So I just want
we
to let
go.
People.
Yeah. We should go to Bali.
We'll talk about that too.
Yes.
Podcast on the road, right? We'll do this on the road podcast. So I just want to give people context. You know, I'm a grew up Midwestern, you know, very standard American diet. But through my own healing journey, came into yoga and into Ayurveda. And Ayurveda, you know, the Sanskrit word Ayurveda is loosely translated as the science of life. And to me, it resembles yoga in the sense that it is the deep study of oneself, right? And so that's how I know it. Now, how can we explore the concepts of Ayurveda? Because The concepts of Ayurveda do include nutrition, right? There is a nutritional component for sure. And there's also many lifestyle habits and practices that go along with practicing Ayurveda. We want to align with the season of the day. So there are different energies. They're right. The three main energies that are doshas, people might call them. And those cycle through the day. So aligning with the energies of the day while simultaneously aligning with the energies of the moon, right? There's the lunar cycle.
Mm-hmm.
While simultaneously aligning with and honoring the energies of the year. There are seasonal cycles, right? And simultaneously honoring and living in the season of our life, right?
Okay.
So yeah, so it's a really beautiful kind of spiraling practice of knowing these three energies, and not just the three energies, but the qualities that make up these energies, and then the elements that make up those qualities.
Okay.
And we come back to this idea of like increases like, and opposites bring balance and healing. So the balance and healing can be brought through yoga. It can be brought through diet and nutrition, and it can be brought through lifestyle practices. Now, we could also do it with herbs and medicinals, but that would be beyond my scope of practice. I'm not trained in that. But that is also a component, herbal and medicinal uses of plants. I could share my lived experience, but that would be outside my scope of practice.
Okay.
So I do stay very conscious of that. So, but I, you know, I'd be happy to talk lifestyle, or diet. We could certainly talk about those things in relationship to Ayurveda and bringing balance. Yeah. So do you think listeners know sort of this, this idea of the five elements? I think we could start there.
Okay. Yeah. Let's start there.
Okay.
Just in case there's a newbie that just wants more information, just can't get it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we could start with this idea. Really, before I start on that, I do want to share one more thing. In Ayurveda, there's another concept, and it's the microcosm and the macrocosm. And this is going to help make sense what I'm about to explain next. So basically, what is happening around us is also happening within us. For example, when the seasons change, and then right now we're getting ready to move from summer to fall. And so what happens in the fall? It gets cooler. It gets drier, right? The leaves dry out and get brittle. That kind of external or macrocosm environmental cooling and drying could also be happening within us.
Okay.
Okay. So maybe our skin gets drier, right? Maybe our heels get drier. Maybe we notice our cuticles are getting drier, or our nostrils inside are getting drier, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that would just be kind of something for people to know that the microcosm mirrors the macrocosm. So we have this relationship with nature, whether we want to acknowledge it, honor it, and practice with it or not. Like, we are living on planet Earth, and we have been created of the same stuff of our universe, which is the five elements, right? We have ether or space,
mm-hmm.
air, fire, water, and earth. And those are the five elements according to the Ayurvedic tradition. Now, of course, traditional Chinese medicine and other ancient wisdom traditions have a similar representation, but that's how it is represented in Ayurveda. Okay. And so from those five elements, there are 20 qualities or gunas. So they are characteristics that describe the three doshas. And I'll just do this briefly. So the space and the air element make up the vata dosha. And that's the energy of movement, right? That's fall time, fall and early winter, right? Where things are changing, things are moving, things are, people feel ungrounded, right? The energy is becoming lighter. Then there is the combination of the fire elements and the water elements, mostly fire, but that's the pitta dosha, and that's the energy of transformation.
Okay.
Right. Think of like a volcano erupting, right? Think of our food being digested by our internal fire.
Okay.
So that's the energy of transformation. Then we have the energy of cohesion. That's the kapha dosha, and that is water and earth. Like, it is cohesive, it is sticky, it is mud, it is that springtime, late winter and into spring. And I will say clearly that it is summer season, late winter and spring is more the kapha time of season.
Okay.
So those are the kind of a brief overview of the five elements. There are different qualities or characteristics that make up each of these three doshas that I mentioned, the vata, pitta, and the kapha.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
It totally makes sense. And as you were speaking, it just reminded me of something that we're made up of the elements. Yes. And we're, what is it, like 70% water? And I've always wondered why the doshas, like, where's the water? Why is the water not represented? Well, it's represented in each one, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And and I will say this, that each of us have our own unique configuration, combination of those five elements and thus three doshas. So your configuration is completely different than mine. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And I won't get too much into the yogic philosophy or the Ayurvedic philosophy of how we get our constitution, but we are born with it. Okay. So we are born with it. And say, just for example's sake, that you are 60% vata, right? And 40% pitta. I don't know. I'm guessing. Mm-hmm. That is your constitution. That is your natural state, right? Mm-hmm. And when you work to bring balance, you're not working to bring an equal amount of vata, pitta, and kapha. You're working towards your innate balance. Does that make sense?
Oh, yes, I see. Okay.
It's not like 33, 33, 33. Right?
I thought that. Okay.
And now we do, like, of course, we all have elements of all the doshas, right? But say your balance is 60, 38, 2. We'll give you 2% kapha. Right. Okay.
So honestly, I think that's exactly balance. What it is.
I know. No, I'm just kidding. Just from what I know about you. Okay. I'm making a wild guess and assumption. I wouldn't know that without going through a deep journey with you to get to know you better, your history. It's because mm-hmm. we have our constitution at birth, but mm-hmm. it can get masked. It can get clouded by our current imbalance, right? Meaning we not only have our constitutional makeup at birth, we also might have a current imbalance, and those might be different. Say you were actually the other, say you were like 60% pitta, mm-hmm. and that was your nature growing up. That was who you were born to be, but living in a society that's very vata, that's very high paced, that's very imbalanced, that's very chaotic, that's very stimulated, right? All the time. You might actually resonate with someone being a vata constitution, but you've just held the imbalance so long that you've taken it on as your constitution. Does that make sense?
Yes, I
okay.
totally get it.
So you have a constitution at birth, and then you might have a current imbalance, which might be different than your constitution, okay? And that's due to many reasons, how you live, how you eat, you know, who you engage in company with, just all the things that might throw someone out of balance.
Okay. And then not to mention also, if you have stored trauma in your body will also,
yes.
okay.
Yeah.
Cause the imbalance. So then how do I get it balanced again?
Yeah. And we'll come back, keeping it as simple as possible. This is again, wildly overview. But to bring it to balance, we're going to use the opposites. Okay. So say you are indeed 60% vata. And right now you have a vata imbalance. Like you're ungrounded. You can't stay focused to task. You're doing a bunch of different things at once, flittering to one, to the other, to the other. You're not sleeping well, right? You're having difficulties falling asleep. Your digestion is not working. You are constipated. You know, you're just having sort of a constipation in the bowels, and you're completely, your skin is drying out and all that. Okay. So say that that is happening. Well, what did I mention 100 times? Dry.
Mm-hmm.
Too much movement, right? Mm-hmm. Like too much movement, scattered activity, right? So we just can simply bring in the opposite. Bring in moist and warm. We'll talk about that in a minute, what specifics that might mean. Bring in moist and warm. And also bring in rhythm and routine, right? Bring in things that are grounding. There's nothing more grounding and balancing for Vata dosha than rhythm and routine.
Yeah. I agree. It's okay. it's like you're actually reading me because I'm like, oh my gosh, how does she know all this?
Well, also we are getting ready to move into Vata season. Remember, so it's not only our unique
That's
constitution.
Right.
We are also living within a seasonal or an annual rhythm. And most of us, at least living in the United States, are going to be moving into fall soon. So I use that as an example for today because it will not only help a Vata imbalanced person, it will help a person who might be moving into the fall season, right? Okay. So, you know, as soon as you feel you need to, bring in warm, moist foods, you know, start to transition away from the salads. Or blanch your salads, you know, cook them a bit. Start to shift towards, you know, broths. Doesn't have to be a heavy soup, but, you know, like a lighter broth soup if it's cooling off, you know, or instead of a cold smoothie, start to move into like a warm oatmeal or a warm smoothie, you know, make your smoothie with hot water. Like there are subtle shifts that we can begin to make to align with the seasonal changes.
Okay. You had mentioned one time, but in your Monday circle, you mentioned you don't drink ice cold water anymore. You now drink it either warm temperature or room temperature.
Yeah, correct. And that is, I mean, there's a lot of reasons for that. And in Ayurveda, I will say digestion is considered the paramount to health. Meaning we must be able to take everything we take in through our five senses. That could be through our mouth and then through food, our food digestion. But anything we take in through our five senses must be digested. It must be brought in, assimilated, processed, absorbed, and the toxins removed and digested, right? So that's all of our experiences. And you mentioned trauma, right? If we cannot, we mentioned that stored charge. So if we are not processing that kind of stuff, that gets stored as ama. And could lead to disease. So one of the first things I learned in Ayurveda is, and this is the Ayurvedic take on it, like cold water and especially ice water. If you think of your digestion or your Agni as a fire, right? That's your internal fire, your fire of transformation. Cold water is going to extinguish the fire, right? Ice cold water is going to reduce the potency of your Agni. So drinking room temperature is what I do in the summer, and then warm water, you know, the other parts of the year is going to actually keep my digestion running better.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's why I do it. And I grew up as an ice water kid. You know, I'd be crunching on that ice all the time, you know, and I've never had, and that was one of the simplest shifts I made that made a huge change in my digestion.
Okay.
But we talked a little bit about food, but it's like our yoga could bring balance and healing, right? So if we can use that same Vata imbalance. If we are feeling ungrounded, if we are feeling chaotic, if we are moving all over the place and doing all these things, and not that that's necessarily bad, a lot of creativity can be found in that place of Vata as well. There's light and shadow aspects to everything. But if that's the kind of life you're living, you know, on the go, overstimulated, overproducing, overwhelmed, perhaps, it's like our practice, our yoga practice could bring balance by simply slowing down, right? We might want to do a restorative style of yoga, right? It seems counterintuitive because someone who's on that Vata energy, like is going to increase like, and the pattern will continue. I'm going to do Ashtanga yoga, and I'm going to do Vinyasa yoga, and I'm going to do the hardest yoga I can, and I'm going to keep moving. And, you know, you keep in that pattern, but can we actually bring in opposites to bring a deeper balance, right? Could I do restorative yoga with supports and blankets and an eye pillow? Could I do a lot of reclined or seated practices that'll keep me lower to the ground and help me tap into that energy of the earth?
Okay. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It makes a lot of sense because right now my only go-to is a warm bath.
Yeah.
I've been in the bath this week. I don't even know how many times.
But that's super intuitive, right? And that's the embodied knowing, you know, because For you, for Veronica, it's like, it's warm and it might be moist. You might be adding herbs or oils or whatever. And that is very grounding. It's warm and moist. And it's still, it's not like you can really do a lot in the bathtub. I mean, you can do some, but you know, the movement is contained by nature of the bathtub, right?
Right.
So it's very intuitive. I think it's great.
Well, I really am going to look into restorative yoga because I feel like that's what I need, because I'm just like I need to ground some more.
Yeah. And that was, you know, like I said, my yoga path has been wildly varied. I went straight from a really spiritual, kind of slow and intentional yoga that lasted a very short time. And then I heard about these more movement-based, you know, Iyengar and Ashtanga, and very powerful styles of physical yoga on Yasara. And I was like, yeah, you know, because that was feeding the imbalance, really. You know, that was what I knew. That's what I understood. And it's taken me a long while to come full circle to be like, okay, what we really need, what we, meaning I, and I personally think anyone living in our modern society, which is very volatile, which is very uncertain, which can be very complex and really quite ambiguous. It's unclear. We don't always, you know, we don't know. I think everyone could probably benefit from more grounding, nurturing styles of yoga.
Yeah, I agree. So Jennifer, I wanted to come right back to that Monday. I'm so sorry. I've been so busy this summer, but I definitely want to come back to your Monday
Love
classes.
It.
Can we talk about that?
Yeah. So a couple
Pick a
things
card.
That, yeah, a couple things that I want to share about that. I have a free Facebook group. It's for women, Yoga and Ayurveda for Modern Women. And in that Facebook group, every Monday morning. Now, if I need to cancel, I will, but it's almost every Monday morning at 11 a.m. Mountain Time. Yeah, I do a cards and what I call cards in conversation. And so I have a plethora of Oracle card decks. And, you know, really, I pick one for the collective. And then if you're there live, I draw you a card and we really kind of just talk about whatever comes up through those cards, whatever wisdom, because we can read, we can share, talk about the oracle card, read what the guidebook might have to say. But what I really love people to do is share how that's really resonant for them, you know, what wisdom that they are really receiving from that card. So we talk and, you know, when we go through all the cards and we do kind of a recap of the card draw. And so that's a really fun way for me to get to connect with people, digitally.
We talked about dharma. So do you mind sharing what is your dharma?
Yeah, certainly. You know, it's really interesting because at the very beginning of our time together, I said this idea of everyone's, and maybe I didn't say this, but I think I wanted to, everyone's dharma is to serve with love. I think I may have said that.
Yes.
And that idea has really struck me. Like I didn't really get that, essence of it. And really that I feel like that is my dharma, is to serve with love. Now who I serve sometimes shifts and transitions. Currently I am working with wisdom seekers and teachers, people who are on this path, who want to be in a community, and who are really aiming towards personal, collective, and planetary wellness. That's really what I am interested in. That takes me a wide variety of places. As you know, I teach yoga to people. I coach people in Ayurvedic wellness. I coach people around their unique expression of their purpose or dharma. And so I do kind of a lot of different things and in different ways. And I really feel this sense of emergence in me more recently around serving women who are supporting or raising kids on the autism spectrum. Okay. You and I have talked a little bit about my personal journey, and that'll be kind of a lot of how my work might shift in the next couple of years. But that's what I'm up to.
Yeah. And I think it's important because most people hear, you know, autism, and it's like, okay, well, that's something we're just going to have to deal with. I don't know if they put them on medications, causes digestive problems as well. And these children need different type of nurturing, different type of more holistic parenting, if you will. No shame, no shade to anybody, But this information is not readily available to most people unless you know what you're looking for, unless you're already in the space and you already know what you're looking for. And so spreading that awareness on how we can help our children, because it's a lot of children and they're just being like, all right, well, put them in this class then, you know, and it's, it almost seems very, it seems like the public wants people to be aware, but they're not really teaching people on how to be aware on how to help the kids and how to support the parents. Right now, it's more like my sense is it's more like, well, here you go. Figure it out.
Right. Well, that's a lot. And we could do a whole other podcast, and perhaps we will. Perhaps you'll have me back when I start that deeper work. But I've been in my own trauma response around it, having a child on the autism spectrum, living in basically complete overwhelm, complete nervous system dysregulation, and really a lot of shame and guilt and a great deal of grief around the whole experience. You know, we have to, I'm still grieving that, the kid that you thought you would have. You know, we all think probably we're going to have a certain type of child, or maybe we don't even know we have those expectations or thoughts until we actually are presented with something else. And so there's, you know, a great deal of grief around that too. So me working through all of that stuff, I've been called to work with women in this way for a very long time, but I have felt like even stepping back into it to support other people, that I would be swallowed whole. If you know what I mean, you know, I would be just swallowed alive by that grief and guilt and shame and overwhelm. And I no longer feel that way. I feel like this wisdom of yoga and Ayurveda and nature can bring such immense healing, not only to you and I and all women, but specifically and all men for that matter. I work with women, but I feel like that if women raising and supporting autistic kids have this information, as you mentioned, it would not only heal self, it would begin to seep and vibrate energetically out into the child and children. So I do think it's a very needed service that people don't even know exists, or that they think they need. You know, they think they need the next diagnosis or the next solution, and really, you know, it comes back full circle to what we mentioned. It's really about getting to know themselves better and about getting to know their children better.
And I do believe that parents can, if they are aware how to, can communicate telepathically with their children who are nonverbal.
Can we just sit and listen? Great. We'll bring it together, because I do agree, we can. It's not called bioessence, but something bioenergetically, telepathically, can you really sit and listen to another being, you know, and co-regulate, come into place of safety with another person so you can be heard and they can be heard. Now that may be through words, or that may be through other ways. Beautiful.
So
I'm sure we'll talk again, Veronica.
Oh yeah, definitely. Standing invitation always. And I'm serious about Bali.
Okay. We'll circle back to that.
The girls' trip. But
love it.
Until then, where can my listeners find you?
Yeah, great. As I mentioned already, I have a free Facebook group, Yoga and Ayurveda for Modern Women. That is probably the easiest way to find me. I spend a lot of time in that Facebook group and would love to meet you there. I also have an online learning site, so you can just search Jennifer Allen Yoga and Wellness.com, and that should come up. It'll share with you other offerings that I have, free and, you know, paid offerings around coaching and yoga. So those are probably the two main places. I am also on Instagram quite a bit. So Jennifer Allen Yoga and Wellness there as well.
Okay, great. I'll definitely link everything on the show notes for sure.
Thank you.